Rattled Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
5 o'clock hour. Chrissy's here. Adam Hill. It's Cofield. Much to get into. More Magic and the Lakers. More VGK and the struggles last night as they fall 5-2 as the series over. Might be a stretch, but very disappointing result. We've got a lot of Antonio Brown material. A lot.
He's our guy. Las Vegas.
I mean, I'm excited to see him here in Las Vegas, but, man, people do not like that guy. Ryan Clark's a pretty nice guy, but he's just hit the breaking point. Just said outright, Antonio Brown is not a good human in this whole battle against Juju Smith-Schuster.
There's been a lot going on, certainly a lot of attacking from Antonio Brown, and I thought the weirdest thing we reached was posting the DM from Juju, where he basically was like, "Hey man, I'm just a college kid trying to get better. What can I do?" And Antonio was like, "Look what he did! Like, yeah, he was very respectful and asked you for advice. What are you talking about?"
And then Antonio Brown had the tweet the other day: "Emotion, boy fumbled the whole postseason, the biggest game of the year. Everyone went blind, too busy making guy famous. Not enough reality these days."
AB's kind of losing it.
Losing it or lost it?
I think he's kind of losing it. I think he can still get it back. I think, the emotion is just overtaking him. I would really hope, for the sake of our Raiders, although they are a division rival of mine, I hope for the sake of the Raiders and for the city of Las Vegas that he finds a way to just focus his energy on the field instead of on Twitter all the time.
Chris, we're going to take the bait on his Charger thing about one of every times, 10 times he does it. Because he did it on Facebook the other day, and a bunch of Chargers fans are like, "Cut it out." And he just said, "They're a rival of mine." So this is the one of the next 10 that I recognize what you said. We just ignore him.
Yeah, they're a division rival. The Raiders.
Chargers. My Chargers. Lifelong fan of the Chargers. Chargers. Okay. Jack Del Rio on NFL.com said about Antonio Brown, "I love the talent, but he has clearly shown that he's going to be a pain in the ass," says the former Raiders coach. "He's a very talented guy, and I would love to have him. I would work with him. No problem. Players have talent. You tend to tolerate it a little bit unless it becomes disruptive to your team." So Gruden still has a lot of work to do with this guy. Someone needs to get to him and just say, "Come on.
Shut the up.
Yeah. Enough of the past."
But I think it's going to have to be on him. I'm sure other people will try, and Gruden will try, and everybody will try to figure out, and Mike Mayock will do what he can. They'll try to figure out how to channel this in a positive way, but it's going to have to be on him to just figure out, like, this is not productive. Like, I need to let it go. I need to move forward and just focus on what he can do on the field. Like, that is on him at this point.
Number four.
Antonio Brown was clearly the problem in Pittsburgh. Or maybe not. Because they're still having problems without him around. Yeah, AB is stirring the pot on Juju. But one of the O-linemen, Ramon Foster, had to come out today and say, "You know what? Former Steelers, you got to stop talking. If you got a problem, call me. I can get you their number. And we need to talk this out." I'll give you what he said specifically here in a second. But what prompted this? Maybe. Well, there's been a lot of stuff going on the last few weeks. But also, what did Rashard Mendenhall say about Big Ben?
He called Big Ben a racist, essentially.
Okay.
Not even essentially. He flat out said it. Now, he did kind of backtrack from it with a second tweet.
Wait, you got to read the first tweet, though.
Well, his first tweet.
How do you backtrack from
this? He said, "All right, all in the mystery. B's racist." And that's Ben. "Ben's racist, and Antonio Brown is black. He had to catch balls from a racist quarterback. Every honest player knows it. It's not a big deal. He was just supposed to take his lickings and move on like a slave for real."
Okay. Walk that back. Wait. Ben's racist. AB is black. He was just supposed to take his lickings and move on like a slave for real. Yeah. Walk that back, please. Tell me what you didn't mean.
His follow-up tweet was, "Clearly it's no fun when everyone's the accused. Please allow the dialogue in sports to be equal. Why is it so easy to shoot at one player but not the other? B's not racist, just like AB's not a dirtbag. Let's be fair."
Wait, what?
You were the one that said he was racist. Like, it wasn't out. I mean, yeah. Listen, I've said it. I've kind of pointed that out and said that I thought there was an issue, but you flat out, you're the one that flat out brought it into the conversation. So I don't know if you were trying to be over the top and like, hey, I'm going to say this, get people to react, and then say, all right, let's tone it back in. And it's you're the one that introduced it. It wasn't really out there that much. You just flat out said it. So to try to walk it back and say, let's not overreact and call him a racist, you're the only one that did it.
Can we get an AB Big Ben storyline, something like it, on Ballers? Because Rashard Mendenhall has written for Ballers.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I mean, I'm sure there will be. There's already been a lot of, you know, like racism. And
has Ricky Jarrett suffered at the hands of a white?
What, the party?
Jog my memory on that. I don't remember that.
Remember he was at the party and...
Because that was the whole kneeling thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to have some highfalutin, rich country club dude.
Yeah. Like, you're one of the good ones, basically.
Yeah, you're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
You behave yourself as a black.
So, I mean,
and all of a sudden, freaking Ricky Jarrett and Denzel Washington's kid, what is it, John David Washington?
Yeah.
Just flips out.
Yeah, it was great. It was a tremendous storyline. Everything they've done in there is tremendous.
It's top notch. And you know what's
fantastic?
Best of all, as we always point out, my God, the writing is great, but the acting just, it takes it over the top.
Everything about that is
The
so
Rock well-made. In front of the NCAA officials is, I guess they'd get an Emmy, Golden Globe worthy.
Emmy.
He was so mad. The passion was so genuine.
I don't know how Ballers doesn't sweep the Emmys every year. Like, just stop even nominating other shows.
Do a Rashard Mendenhall, like, just step back a little bit. You don't know how Ballers is still on the air.
Ballers is the greatest show ever on television. It should win every single Emmy. I don't know who's saying that.
Yeah.
I just did. But I don't know who is. Let's be real. It shouldn't win an Emmy.
Is it the worst show you've ever loved? Is it worse than Vanderpump Rules?
Probably. Vanderpump Rules is fantastic.
God!
It's fantastic in every way.
God.
No.
I don't believe this.
No.
I did find myself last night. I caught up on the last two episodes. And, like, in the halfway through the second episode, I was like, why do I love this show so much? Like, what is wrong with me?
Did a kid cry about pasta on that show? Yes or no?
Okay, first of all, there's a lot of controversy about that. Because you did send the meme the other day and kind of made a reference to it. I don't think pasta is pasta. I believe pasta is cocaine. And he was screaming about
Why
the girl.
Why did he pick such a starchy?
Because the girlfriend had eaten all the pasta.
Ah.
I don't think pasta's pasta.
Ah, really?
Yeah. Oh, so it's a little scandalous on Vanderpump.
And is that accepted? Not about the pasta.
Is that accepted terminology for Coke?
Yeah, I was about to. I would think something like
the yay. I don't know. I think when since they're on TV and they're basically what it is they're just, you know, they're waiters at a restaurant in L.A. So I don't think they can actually get into the fact that they're all using cocaine on the job. I believe pasta to be a slang for cocaine in this sense. But I don't know. They did deny that on a talk show, so I don't know.
Back to Ramon Foster, the offensive lineman. Here's what he actually said, trying to make some peace. He said, moving forward, any former player or affiliate of the Steelers who has an issue with anyone still in the locker room, please contact me or Marquise Pouncey or anyone else you feel you can talk to. Whoever you have an issue with, we will get you their number so you can address them. I promise. These media takes might give you y'all good traffic on social media outlets, but the guys still in the locker room who y'all still know personally have to answer for those comments. Now, the funny thing on this is I'm thinking to myself, I know I got really mad because I had Le'Veon Bell's back, and as it turns out, I was right. He's a Jet now. I got really annoyed when the offensive linemen, a couple of them, four of the Steelers, trashed Le'Veon Bell, and they were like, oh, you know, we get nothing in terms of pay, and this guy makes all this money. Yeah, Ramon Foster was one of those guys.
Right.
But so now you're the peacemaker?
Yes. I think he's realized he has allowed it to get this far and been a part of it.
Yeah.
But now he's part of the group of saying, let's tone it down a notch. No,
Foster,
you tone it down a notch.
Foster, middle of the season. Sorry, I stepped on you. I just hate it came to this. He's making seven times what I make, twice as much as Al Villanueva is making, and we're the guys who do it for him. But now everyone's got to tone it down. Is that right?
Wasn't that the same as Rashard Mendenhall? Mendenhall's the one that called Ben a racist and then said, hey, let's tone it down on the racist. That's the same thing Ramon Foster's doing. Like, let's not bring our drama to social media. I did it, but not you.
Number three. So I sort of squashed our 3 and 4 schedule together. So I'm going to intro a different 3 that you don't have.
Okay.
And my God.
Wait, we have a schedule?
We have a little rundown.
We just threw things out.
I had the sound on this, and I forgot to send it over to our sound guy, right? Because I don't cut any sound on the show. I'm the lead host. I don't do stuff like that. Chicks in the Office, interesting show that's on Barstool Radio, had on Pauly D and Vinny.
Oh, Double Shot at Love, coming out.
Yeah.
New reality show.
Yeah.
So what is that show?
I believe it's them trying to find girlfriends.
Okay. So we were just talking about worst shows that you watch. Ballers, Vanderpump Rules. You're a big Jersey Shore guy.
Oh, yeah.
The situation's in jail. Now, I've seen one story that was interesting today is that the situation is in the same jail as Billy McFarland.
Oh, boy.
And I don't want to go down this whole path of what happens to the poor. Like, say, I don't know, someone's family in this room, if someone from one of our families went to jail. Like, the stories they could tell about jail are different than, say, Billy McFarland. There is clearly different levels of jail where people are sent.
Sure.
So the thing that got me is they started getting into this whole conversation. Vinny and Pauly D are like, yeah, we talked to, what's his name, Mike Sorrentino, the situation. We talked to him every day. Yeah, there's a prison app. We just talked to him. Oh, you want me to ask him something right now? And the situation answers. I'm like, what kind of prison is this? Well, that's not the prison I would go to. You would go. You'd be in Leavenworth, like Vic. They have phones? They can text?
They're video phones, and
what is going on?
Like, I learned a lot following, you know, a television show I started watching called Love After Lockup, and I know.
Is that right? They're just chatting all the time?
People have, yes. Like, as long as somebody puts money on the other end of it, then you could communicate, like, morning till night if you want to.
What is this? What kind of, what?
I don't know if it's that often.
It's shocking.
I mean, unless they doctored the show or the video, yeah. I mean, when they were talking about it, Pauly D is like, yeah, let me send him some right now. And he got an answer immediately. I'm like, prison? What is this? Rich person's prison.
Sounds like a nice prison. That's where I was.
Is there supposed to be anything as a nice prison?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Billy McFarland has all the amenities. He's probably trying to start a festival in there.
Boy, that guy. He gets to go to a nice prison after what he did? Are Bill Polian and Charlie Ebersol going to go to a nice prison?
Most likely. You're going to go to a fancy prison.
What's the problem?
That was a joke, right?
No, someone should go to jail.
Oh.
The lawsuits have started to come on the AAF.
Well, these are civil lawsuits for sure. We haven't seen any criminal charges, but you don't know.
Well, there should
be
charges
follow.
In all these towns for money's owed. I mean, I only saw one city so far, but San Antonio's like, you owe us $4 million. Let's go.
They're not going to get it.
Isn't that what?
Why, Chrissy, I don't. There really is no difference between. I mean, the AAF got off the ground. It was something real, but it was a scam as big or bigger than that fire festival, and Billy McFarland is in jail. Yeah, fraud. Yes. Lori Loughlin might go to jail.
She really might now that she turned down the deal.
Yeah, she might go to jail. Craig Carton, a ticket scammer, talk radio guy in New York, he's going to jail.
By the way, do you feel bad? Do you feel bad for her at all?
Fraud is bad.
Did you see that? Because I totally believe the story.
Don't even ask me this.
No, I saw the story that she was one of the very few that turned down the original plea deal. You know, Felicity Huffman took it, and you know she moved on. Now, Lori Loughlin's attorneys basically told her, "Don't take the deal. They're just messing with you. You're fine." And then she turned it down. And then the feds came back and said, "Okay, we're adding all of these other charges too."
Yep.
I don't feel bad for her because she did it, and it's rich people doing rich people things. It's always very obnoxious, and I'm glad they're getting punished for it. But at the same time, if you're getting advice that's that bad, I do kind of feel bad for you. On top
Who do I really feel bad for? Who got bad advice? Michael Vick. He got screwed by the system because his lawyer was a moron, and everyone else flipped on him. No, I don't feel bad for Lori Loughlin. I don't feel bad for Massimo Giannulli. I don't feel bad. Here's another one. You know, I was watching your guy John Oliver, and he was covering this. I don't know, a couple episodes ago, and he was talking about the kids. I don't feel bad for the kids. You know what? You know you didn't get into USC. You know you're stupid. You even said on a video, "I don't care about school." You know what you were doing. You're an entitled brat. No, they should all freaking go to jail.
Did you ever wear any Massimo gear growing up?
Of course I did. Yes,
of course I did.
Yes, and I thought I was cool, and now I hate myself for having it. I wasn't cool, but at least I could fit into it. I could, look at an old picture and I could fit into it. And now I'd have moobs and my stomach all over the place. So they didn't even make it anymore. Has it kind of sunk to a level where it's?
I think you can.
Are we just picking up secondhand at Goodwill? What are we doing?
I think it's a Target brand.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, Target.
Well, sorry, Target. I'm not buying that ever again. I can't fit into it now anyway. But no, I don't feel bad for Lori Loughlin.
That's bad advice.
What about her kid?
Get a better lawyer. Plus, what's the difference? I just told you what happens. The situation's in jail texting. Where do you think she's going?
I don't want Aunt Becky in jail. That's all I'm saying. I separate Lori Loughlin from...
They're going to reopen Alcatraz? She's going to Alcatraz.
Well, they just send her there. It is open.
Oh, God.
As a tourist attraction.
If she was the only... Oh, that would be great.
And then
That's actually what they should use Alcatraz for. Fix it up just a little bit with the bare necessities, and especially rich celebrities who are dirtbags, they all go there.
And make a reality show out of it. Please.
But so, when you're walking around...
And it all goes to charity.
When you're doing the tour, when you're walking around doing the tour at Alcatraz, you're like, all right, here's Lori Loughlin, here's Billy McFarlane. You see all the celebrities. Here's the situation. And you're actually walking by their cell and watching them?
I'm great. I'd love to have a stick and just rattle the cage, wake them up. lock them up.
Get up, you puss.
Lock them up.
Number two.
I've lost all focus. I'm getting too worked up. Is Magic going to be at the center of a hashtag MeToo? There's some weird stuff out there.
Yeah.
One of the thoughts is that Magic got out in front of troubles and walked away not because of LeBron, not because of Genie, not because of Adam Silver, not because he wants to tweet, which is the dumbest thing ever. That's not what he meant, so cut it out. But that he got out in front of allegations that he was a really mean, abusive boss.
Yeah.
That seemed like way out of character for him. Would he just be hell on wheels at work?
Maybe. I don't think you ever really know.
Yeah.
Obviously this is going on with one of the presidential campaigns too, with Amy Klobuchar kind of dealing with the same things. And she kind of said the same thing he did. And he said, am I tough? Hell yeah. You work for me, I'm demanding. That was one of the things he said. So, he's not really denying it in that way. I think he's denying whether he went over the top or not. But I don't think you ever know who the crazy, over-the-top, angry, difficult people to work for are.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what radio stations they work
for. Wait, what? Chrissy's like,
You never know what radio shows they're in charge of.
Yeah, I was about to say, there are exceptions to every rule. And I had a hunch before about what was difficult, and now I know a whole new world of difficult.
Adam is right. There are a lot of times, though, that you don't know.
No. You
like,
never know.
You, Chrissy, you told me about a sexually harassy creep that you used to work for, and I had no idea. I'd never heard that before. Yeah. Comes off as a nice guy, so you never know.
Yeah.
So maybe Magic was hell on wheels.
Well, you could be nice and sexually harassing and creepy.
There's no allegations like that, right, yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, I suggested me too, but it just... There's whispers out there that maybe Magic was more than mean.
Yeah. So verbally abusive boss.
What are they going to do with the spot? Are they going to actually go and have a real search and get one of the best basketball minds in the NBA? Marcus Thompson, who's all over the Warriors scene, said, you know what? This dude, Bob Myers, 44 years old. He's been the guy running the Warriors. Get him. And here's the thing. Folks, Magic Johnson walked away from a $10 million a year salary. For $10 million, that gets you anyone you want in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, if I were the Lakers, I would make a run at Myers and just make the Warriors owners pay Myers. Just screw with them. Yeah. I would do it to the top five guys in the league. Hey, Toronto, you want to give Ujiri another raise? Okay. Well, we can give him $10 million, so let's go.
And you won't have to pay Canadian taxes.
Well, that, yes.
Although California taxes are pretty high, too. And that helps you in the long run. If you do that to a team and make them overpay for an executive, all of a sudden maybe they don't have certain money to pay other executives or other coaches, and they have to scrimp elsewhere, and it costs them some wins down the road at some point. That would be a good strategy.
Here's a list. I like the site. Larry Brooks Sports are pretty good. Larry Brown Sports, sorry. I was mixing Larry Brown and no, Sports by Brooks is back, actually.
Okay. Back
Sam Presti is with OKC. He's done a pretty good job and, you know, got Paul George to somehow re-sign in OKC. David Griffin, former Cavs leader. Neil Oshie. He's in Portland. Or, here's the fifth name on the list. Pat Riley.
Oh, my God.
You got to wash your hands clean of the Lakers stuff. Lakers, please.
Yep, just stop.
Fresh start.
But the problem is, what's worse? Riley or whoever LeBron wants?
I know.
I mean, I almost would go Riley.
Riles is one of the guys who didn't take any guff from LeBron and actually built the roster the way he wanted to.
Yeah, and maybe Riley will have that relationship, and maybe LeBron would agree to it. I mean, I think he got away from him for a reason, but maybe he realizes, hey, I need that guy. And that's what you got to sell LeBron on that. Sell him on, we know you like power, but you work really well with Pat Riley.
Man, this is so important. You got this guy signed up for 4 years. You pissed away the first year with LeBron. You got to get someone in there who's going to nail this and get the second or third running mates, make good trades, make good signings, and somehow scramble out of the disaster that's been the last, you know, I mean, it's longer than 3 years, but the recent years have been really bad. Obviously, the Kobe two-year deal for $49 million was a disaster. But since then, they put themselves in a position drafting decently. They didn't hit home runs every year, but then you just give away Russell, you give away Randall. Like, there's only so many times you can recover from that. And this is a bad... This look here is awful around the league. Right? I just said, somehow Sam Presti got PG-13 to stay out of L.A., L.A., the Lakers kind of did it to themselves. There's a rep there. It's not a Knicks rep, but there's a rep.
Yeah.
It's a freaking mess.
This is a massive decision for the Lakers, though.
They have to nail it. They have to nail it, and they got to get a real boss in there.
I mean, you could potentially be facing, if you do it the wrong way or let LeBron get his way and run the team himself, you could be looking at wasting, you know, 4 years of LeBron James.
Number one.
VGK loses. Not a spirited effort. That's basically the words of Gerard Gallant. He didn't go into a lot of X's and O's, did he?
No.
He really harped on effort.
It was like a minute long presser.
Really? Surprising.
Yeah.
He's usually in a great mood after losses.
Well, if I was there, it really would have gone better, I feel like. But yeah, it was not.
You could have pressed it for a couple extra questions and had a chair thrown and...
Could have easily happened.
Another, I think you're wrong.
I think you're wrong.
That was not to me.
All right, we break down the game last night and look ahead to game two. Also later in the hour, Magnum, our guy on the road in San Jose, will join us.
The Big 5 at 5 is brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. Call them today for a free consultation at 702-570-9000. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Picked up by the Sharks, lifted out by Burns. He takes the check, and now we've got another altercation brewing out in front of the Sharks' net. Officials get in, look out, there's the horn. The game seems to be over here. They let the clock run during that last exchange, so I don't believe they're going to continue playing, but the action is not stopped. It appears the game has gone final. Sharks 5, Golden Knights 2.
What the hell was going on? Dude was like, all right, enough. It's over. Is it over? I don't know.
He was ready for happy hour, as he told us.
Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Boston trailing the Leafs 2-1. 3 minutes left.
In the second period.
I was surprised how close the odds were for the Capitals and... the Canes.
Canes have been good.
Well, they're not good in the first period. 3-0. Caps leading. And then Colorado and Calgary. That is a 7 o'clock start. So we did a bunch of VGK breakdown in hour one. Adam, lay it out again. You had 3 goals in the game. And I don't mean you scored. You had 3 key things you needed to achieve on the Golden Knights side. You lose 5-2. What 3 things did they whiff on?
The 3 things that they talked about being the most important going into the series were, one, to put a lot of pressure. I don't like the reactions I'm seeing in the room right now. There's something happening online. They wanted to put a lot of pressure on Martin Jones because he had been shaky. His numbers had not been good. There'd been a lot of issues with him all season long, and he'd been very bad against the Knights. So get pressure on him, get traffic in front, get pucks on the net, force him to make plays and cut down on rebounds, and they didn't even get any pressure on him whatsoever. Another one was to stay out of the penalty box because the Sharks are really, really good when they have their full team on the penalty, or excuse me, on the power play, and they're really good in other situations as well. 3-on-3, 4-on-4, you don't see them a whole lot, but you did last night because the Knights were in the penalty box so often, so that wasn't accomplished. And then the other one was manage pucks. They did a horrific job at that. They were very careless, a lot of turnovers that were leading to goals the other way. So all of the three things that they've talked about over and over and over again the last couple weeks, they failed to do all three.
All right. You talked to Dan Duva. I was here. Dan Duva was on with us at 4 o'clock, and you threw the question at him about lineup changes. You had a couple of tweaks, so tweaks or major changes?
I think they're tweaks, and I think going in, the lineup was set at almost every spot. The first line set, the second line set, the fourth line is fairly set, although Dan mentioned a couple of possibilities on the fourth line. But there's one spot on the third line. You've got Cody Eakin with Alex Tuck, and then three other guys that could fill that other spot. Gallant went with Tomas Nosek, which I thought was the least likely of the three guys to play in that spot. Tomas Nosek, very hard-nosed, a grinder, can really help out on the penalty kill. Brandon Peary, almost a purely offensive guy that can generate offense, which I thought they might want to go with him to help jumpstart the offense. And then the other one was Ryan Carpenter, who is a really good all-around player, doesn't do anything really spectacular, but Gallant loves him, talks all the time about how much he likes him as a player and trusts him out on the ice, and a guy who's on the Sharks before and, knows them well, probably has a little added motivation going into those games as well. So I thought it'd be Carpenter. Instead, he went with Nosek. I think they make a change and go with either Carpenter or Peary. I would expect Carpenter, but Peary would be the option if you want to go offensive. And then the top two defensive pairs have been pretty much set for a while, but the third one, there's three guys: Merrill, Miller, and Nick Holden, and it's two of those three guys. The one that I thought was least likely to sit was Colin Miller, but he is the one that sat. Colin Miller, by far the highest paid of that group, one of the highest paid defensemen overall, an established guy, and a guy that's really, really good at driving the power play for the Knights, and he found himself on the bench with Merrill and Holden getting the call. I expect Miller to be in for Holden tomorrow. If you look at the numbers, the analytic breakdown, and I know Gallant doesn't get into analytics very often, but his assistant coaches certainly do. The best combination that they have among those three is absolutely Miller and Merrill. They have been far and away the best of that group, and I would expect that to be the group tomorrow. The worst has been Merrill and Holden. That's the one they went with yesterday. That was a bit of a surprise, but I do expect Miller to be back in, and we'll see what they do at that spot.
Who do you think was the most dangerous player for San Jose?
I mean, I think it's...
Who was
last night?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Burns was really, really dangerous and really good against him. So was Carlson.
Okay.
And if you look up front, I mean, Tomas Hertl has killed the Golden Knights. He did it again because I think...
Who thought
so
he was
attention.
Dinged up coming in?
There's a lot of guys that were dinged up, but, Timo Meier missed a game at the end of the season. Pavelski missed 7 games before playing the last three. But their forwards are really dangerous, and, they showed that last night. And Hertl, as I mentioned, a guy who has been really good against them, has killed them. And if you saw on the Evander Kane goal, which, by the way, Evander Kane made a great deflection. It was a ridiculous play by Carlson to set it up by looking off the defenders and then finding Kane streaking to the net and having a perfect deflection past Fleury. But you can't let Evander Kane just operate in the middle of the ice all by himself. It's way too easy for him to score. And the reason that he was is because Holden got distracted following Hertl and making sure that he couldn't make a play, and it left the center of the ice wide open. Nate Schmidt didn't rotate in time. That was a very, very bad goal. It was a very disturbing look that the Golden Knights got there, that they had no idea how to handle it.
I heard through the grapevine. Well, first of all, why are you here?
What do you mean?
You should be in San Jose.
You've
been the number two guy on the beat, and last year you were the number one guy on the other beat. I don't get it. I can feel your pain. I can see it in your eyes when you hesitated for a second. after I asked you, hey, who was the most dangerous guy on the other side? And you're like, Brent Burns.
My guy.
Yeah, you choked up a little bit.
Well, I miss Brent, but I'll see him. I'll see him
next week,
Saturday when they get here.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, they're going to be here. Brent Burns. See, this is what you're missing out on. Something called Hamal Javeri did a feature on Brent Burns.
That's
and
my job.
And his fascination with hockey hair.
Yeah.
Ah, listen to the sadness. Yeah, Burns said, ever since I was a kid playing with teammates, you always tried to do something crazy with your hair to bring the team together. As a kid, you're watching your favorite player go to warm-ups with no helmet on, and you just see the flow. Going with the way he doesn't speak like this, by the way. It's just kind of always been really important with the NHL. I think that's why it's such a big thing to do it today. He actually admits he's a big guy, right? He's a burly, yeah, like intimidating, manly man.
Loves wine, though.
He said, hair is just another part of the routine. My wife always braids my hair at home, said Brent Burns.
Yeah, that
or
makes
Brent.
Sense. He's into travel and wine.
Does a French braid for me.
He likes the finer things in life.
What's a French braid? I don't know what a French braid is. I'm bald.
You don't... Okay, oh, goodness gracious.
You do it on a guy?
I personally wouldn't... I don't think so. But whatever, you know, whatever you like. I will wear my hair in a French braid tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay?
I don't get this part, because there's... Dudes, there are certain things that get the competitive juices flowing. I don't really have much competition I'm in now, but I don't know, something. Something. You come up with something. Just do the, you know, that wrestling thing. You're hitting your shoulders or you do the... Who came out and just got the snot slapped out of him before fights in MMA?
Oh, Diego Sanchez used to do it to himself.
Oh, yeah. You just
yes. Yes.
Well, that too. Yes. Yeah, you come down chanting. Here's Burns. Burnsy, as Adam likes to say. Yeah, he mentioned, my wife always braids my hair at home. She does a French braid for me. I put a little beard oil in. That just gets the competitive juices going.
Huh? He's a very complicated guy, Steve.
He's a deep.
Yeah, don't judge a book by its cover.
He's a deep, big fella.
We had a lot of very, very good conversations last year about a lot of different topics.
We'll get more. Well, you know, we actually have someone there. Sorry you missed out. But we have someone there. He can give us the skinny on Burns' hair and what's going on in San Jose in between games. Magnum checks in.
Grab Bag is presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Try world-class restaurants like Chart House, Grotto Italian Ristorante, Vic and Anthony Steakhouse, and the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Only at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Backward pass, Eric Carlson into the zone. Eric waits, bumped in the high slot. Down he goes. Burns shoots, score! Brent Burns off the right post and into the goal. It's a 2-0 San Jose lead.
Let's hit the road. Magnum, San Jose. Let's find out what the mood is in between games as VGK is down 1-0. It's brought to you by Subaru of Las Vegas. Magnum, what's up, buddy?
How you doing, Steve?
I'm good. All right, well, let's talk about what goes down today in between games in terms of what the two teams do, practice, skate around. What was the action today?
Well, the Golden Knights had an optional skate. It seemed like pretty much everybody was out there. They didn't skate a whole lot. There weren't a whole lot of players available to the media after the skate, but the mood was pretty, I'd say, upbeat considering what transpired last night. I don't think anybody was pushing the panic button yet. I think they know they have to be better. I think Coach Gallant knows they have to be better. But, you know, the bottom line is they weren't good last night, and San Jose took advantage of that.
There's usually a common theme. The players usually seem to get the same message together, and if they do, you know, two or three guys available, it's always saying the same thing. So what was the theme coming out of the practice?
Well, that they obviously have to cut down on the penalties. That was a pretty big message. They need to be a little more disciplined, not so much penalty-wise, but certain things that they're doing on the ice. One of the things that kind of stood out to me was Riley Smith said they weren't on the same page. And to me, that kind of, if you look through the last 10 games of the season, it seemed like the Golden Knights all weren't on the same page those last 10 games. So for Riley Smith to come out and say that some guys weren't on the same page, to me, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, I would think so. This time of year, you kind of want to be on the same page. What, in your mind, after watching the game, what can they do to fix that?
Well, I think they need to find a way to create more shot opportunities. Obviously, going into the third period, you only have 10 shots. You're not going to win any hockey games playing like that. They need to figure out a way to cut down on the penalties, because I think 5-on-5, they're better or as good as San Jose. 4-on-4, they're clearly not as good. 3-on-3, they're definitely not as good. When they're on the PK, it looked like last night at least San Jose had the better of them on the one-man advantage. Special teams was key, and I think a lot of people knew that coming in. And last night, the Golden Knights special teams kind of let them down.
Did the Golden Knights have a new player out on the ice today?
We did have a new player. However, it wasn't the one that everybody was speculating was going to be joining the team. It was Dylan Ferguson who came up from Kamloops. He's apparently, under NHL rules, you're allowed to carry an emergency third goaltender in the playoffs. So they brought in Dylan Ferguson to be that emergency goalie. So not expecting to see any of him. He's only, I think, 19 years old. But, the one guy that was speculated, he was not there today.
So, Adam, who is this Russian?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not out there. Gallant was asked about it by Ed Graney, and Gallant basically said, yeah, George had mentioned something to me this morning about the rumors circulating, and I don't really know a whole lot about him, but I hope he if he does get here, I hope he gets here soon, something along those lines, and he joins the team.
It would be interesting. So for those that don't know, Gusev is he's on the reserve list of the Knights, so he can sign at any time and play right away. So jump right in, play in the playoffs for the Golden Knights. He was the leading scorer in the KHL. He's a very, very talented player, but there is some complications. His season is over, but his contract runs through the end of the month, and it appears Russia is going to fight to keep him from signing with the Knights because they want him to play in the World Championships next month. So there's a big battle going on, but the Knights theoretically could sign Gusev right now, bring him into the lineup tomorrow night and play, and he might be one of the more talented players on the team. But there is a whole lot of things standing in the way of that happening, and I think this morning there was a report that he was on his way to Vegas. I don't know that to be the case, so I think people freaked out a little bit, but certainly there is that chance that at some point Gusev could be playing for the Golden Knights in the postseason.
Yeah, and Gallant wouldn't commit to playing him. He basically kind of brushed it off when he said, oh, I don't really know a whole lot about this guy. I think it would be kind of strange if he did just join the team. You know, you have to wonder what the morale for some of those guys who might be losing a spot would be like. You know, was there going to be a little animosity like, hey, this guy just got here, why does he get to play over guys who've been playing all season? You know, I don't know, and that's something that Coach Gallant would have to figure out, as well as the general manager and the rest of the front office. But yeah, you mentioned extremely talented. The guy had 82 points in 62 games in the KHL. His team was eliminated on Tuesday night in the KHL playoffs. There was no indication that he was on his way. I think there's a possibility that maybe he is. However, I don't know if he's going to play, and I would be very weary of any reports that indicate he is going to play right away.
Magnum, what are you doing tonight? You doing the media meetup at the Giants game?
Yeah. I'm actually sitting at the BART station in Daly City about to get on the train and head into the city and go watch Giants and the Rockies.
Have you been there before?
Matchup tonight. Yeah, I have. I saw, actually, it's been a long time, but I got Barry Bonds hit one of his home runs. I think it was number 711 off of Billy Wagner of the Mets many, many years ago.
Nice. All right, Magnum, we appreciate you checking in. Have fun tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Talk to you guys
there
tomorrow.
There you go. Our guy on the road, Magnum, covering the series in San Jose, in San Fran. It's all brought to you by Subaru of Las Vegas. If you're looking for a new vehicle and someone you can trust, go to Finley Subaru of Las Vegas, home of the stress-free pricing and non-commissioned sales. You can find them on the web at SubaruofLasVegas.com. We got a couple minutes, right?
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Okay. Oh, look at Chrissy's like, let's do the grab bag. Do we want to play this? I don't know if anyone out here cares about Mike Francesa, but radio legend. And he's getting long in the tooth, and he insists on doing a show by himself, and he's in a basement in his house. And, you know, one of the things about him is that he refuses to admit if he doesn't know something, and he refuses to admit that he was wrong on a pick. And it's been going on for a couple of days. He slammed Virginia a couple of months ago and said they can't win the title, and he laid it out. And yesterday we played someone called in. They're like, you said they couldn't win, and, you know, they could never win. He's like, I never said that. So we had the loop of them, like, they can't win. And he's just like, dude, just give it up. So Ty Jerome goes on, one of the star players from Virginia, and, like, the kid's just busting his chops a little bit, and Francesa just can't back down.
Our offensive numbers, offensive efficiency, I think we're in the top five in the country. We have been all year. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people don't do their proper research of college basketball before they speak, but...
No, that's for me. But, you know, the bottom line is it's not about that, because that's about beating bad teams. It's about making big shots. And, you know, you guys did have some
balls,
though.
Okay, you can stop this. So the kid says, like, you didn't do your homework. And he didn't.
That's for me.
Offensive efficiency is about beating bad teams?
No, of course not. Offensive efficiency numbers are weighted to schedule and everything else, too. But in the end... People kept saying Virginia can't score, and that's what Francesa said. That's just looking at final scores. That's not actually paying attention. And we talked about it before the championship game. Virginia is in the top five in the nation in offensive efficiency. They limit possessions. That's why they don't score a lot of points, but they can score, and they're very efficient offensively.
I thought this was ridiculous. Just have fun with the kid. He's a local guy from New Rochelle. Just backed down and said, you know what, kiddo, you got the job done. I was wrong, but he kept going.
And that game where you guys couldn't buy a point for 5 minutes in each one. And that's where you look for guys to knock down shots. And that's why, you know, you guys lost two big leads at the end of those games and then came back, which was remarkable. So I don't worry about what you do against, you know, some team that you beat by 40. Those numbers are all skewed. I want to see it in the big games. And you guys miraculously made some shots. Not every shot, but the lead that you blew against Auburn versus the lead against Texas Tech. Which one was more surprising to you? That it just
so silly. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow.